Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I don't know why I feel giggly. I'm going to get a hold of that. I'm going to get a handle on that right now. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up later on, we have Peter Carlin, TV critic from the Oregonian, who's also going to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions. Clyde Lewis with news at Ground Zero, at the top five, and so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for your president, prophet, seer, revelator, and golden god.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio.
Well, friends of the man who was shot last week at the Belmont Market say he's doing better. They said Chester Yeom is conscious and asked that the owner of the market, Alex Lee, close the store on Sundays from now on. They said he credited his friend's wish, adding he feels guilty he should have been shot rather than Yeom, the father of two. And let's see here. We also found out that this fellow doesn't have insurance, which is an even worse thing. His family put out a statement saying at the present time that doctors do not expect to operate for the removal of the bullet. He remains hospitalized and on the ventilator, so he'll probably stay that way. Meanwhile, police on Saturday arrested two more men in connection with the shooting of this fellow. They identified one man as 22-year-old Tashio Yanakodo, and the other is 24-year-old Shamar Hansen. Police believe Hansen participated in the March 4th robbery of Belmont Market. Police arrested him over the weekend and charged with first-degree robbery. Police said the other man was arrested early Saturday by Vancouver police on suspicion of the same charge. Detectives believe he drove the getaway car, which is a Chevrolet Corvette. And how did they find that? Well, police said they found it Saturday near the intersection 122nd and Holgate after a tip from the car's owner who told them the vet may have been used in the robbery. He said, yeah, he's the owner. He lent it to those guys. He didn't know what they were going to do with it.
Wait, so it was at 122nd and Holgate, but not like right where I live, but I mean, I know where that is. Mm-hmm. Is that, I never know, I can never remember this. Now, when they talk about the Felony Flats area, that is where? Where is that exactly?
Where you live.
Thank you. You don't even know where I live. It's just, you just assume that that's the case.
Well, there's a footprint through that entire area of Felony Flats.
So I think it's above 82nd.
It's just sort of a generalized wherever Rick Emerson lives at the moment. Wherever there's a lot of rapings and shootings going on, that's where it's like a Tom Joad sort of a thing. Wherever people are being raped repeatedly, wherever there are holdups and muggings, wherever cars are stolen three or four times, Ma, I'll be there. Well, all right. So
no, there it's you go. Further above where you live.
The best part, by the way, is that I pulled into I overslept this morning and I did the whole thing because it's a whole long story. But I switched washers last night because I can never remember to do it in the morning, and I'm kind of at the shades of Scotty J. I'm kind of anal about making sure that I wear the right watch for the right shirt. Anyway, and so I switched watches last night, but I forgot to set the time. And so I woke up this morning, as I mentioned earlier, and I look at my watch. I'm like, that's only 7:40. I can sleep for another 20 minutes. Completely, of course, I'd forgotten to, after all my kvetching about daylight savings time, I'd forgotten to change my watch. I get to work at like 9:30. I had to drive. I ended up not bicycling, so I feel like a fat ass. And I didn't wear my belt today. I couldn't find my belt this morning. So I'm walking around just feeling like a hick. Like I'm holding my pants up with a piece of twine. I drive the Forerunner to work today, and Brian Jones, who's the director of engineering, mentions my other car. He's talking about my Ford, and he goes, hey, did somebody hit your car? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, when you were parked here on Friday, I noticed a huge scrape down the side of it, which is something I've been down the passenger side, which is something I have not noticed because, of course, I never get into the passenger side. So I don't have the car today. My wife has got it, but now apparently there's some gigantic scrape down the side of my car that I haven't noticed, which... And, of course, in my neighborhood, it's not unheard of that, like, somebody would just come and, like, whack your car and just drive away. So I've got that to look forward to. Fantastic. All right. Well, in any event.
Meanwhile, police hazed a man at the Clackamas Town Center on the food court after he sold jewelry from an apartment store and took off running. Nobody seems to be a bit surprised about this.
Well, they didn't even bat an eye. What's happening? Tasering. Hand me the salt. You know, somebody just shoveling fried Cajun food into their mouth, you know, next to a Sbarro's somewhere, while a guy's being tasered by like a rodeo pig. Who would even notice in Clackamas? You know what I mean?
Good God Almighty.
But 21-year-old David Razavan allegedly grabbed some jewelry from Sears. Who knew that Sears had anything of value in their jewelry department? It was probably cubic zirconia. He ran through the mall, ignoring commands from police. He was chased into the food court. Finally, the taser brought him down right in the middle of everyone's lunch.
You really got to steal in bulk from Sears if you're, I mean, really, if you're bent on... Where could you possibly... What are you going to do with that?
It's lovely. And it's from Sears.
Nothing says I love you like a giant pile of jewelry from Sears Roebuck. And whatever happened to Roebuck? I mean, didn't it... When did it stop being Sears Roebuck and just become Sears?
Probably in the 70s.
Did it? Now...
Well, they got rid of Roebuck in the 1890s.
They took him out back and whacked him. They had him removed from the equation. I just wonder if it's still... Like, is it still technically, did they just drop that for expediency sake or for marketing purposes? Well, whatever.
Plenty of money to spend on signs, I would imagine.
And you know, he was probably, and again, because you probably have to steal massive quantities of Sears jewelry for it to really be worth anything. He was probably burdened down with just dozens of boxes. I see a guy running out of there just like dripping with faux emerald necklaces, just lining each arm, and then being tasered the food. Apparently, felony flats, by the way, is 72nd and Foster. 72nd Foster / Powell, which is right by, that's sort of by that Tom Peterson's Inglourious 2 place, and it's Fred Meyer up there. All right, yeah. Fantastic.
So that's that for now.
There you go.
But what kind of life is this when your biggest crime is to rob jewelry from Sears?
Really?
It's not even going to be made into a movie.
Of all of the places that you could steal, why would you steal something? That doesn't even make any sense. Why would you steal something inside a mall? I mean, there's nowhere to run to. I'm not trying to give... It doesn't matter. I always give this preface, and I'm not trying to give advice to thieves. But clearly, even if I was giving, you wouldn't take it. I mean, even if we were going to sit here and describe to thieves exactly how to steal and commit crime more efficiently, clearly this is advice that would go unheeded because they're just dumb. Because they're just stupid. And there's no reversing that train. So... If you were going to rob a store, it seems like you would rob a store that was, you know, located on a street. Honestly, you could just grab something and run out of the sidewalk and get into the getaway car and you skedaddle. If your plan of escape is to leave the Sears and then run into the middle of the mall toward the food court, you have not, like our president, you have not properly configured an exit strategy in your head. So, anyway, there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
Hollywood USA comes to Portland. Therefore, the Broadway Bridge will be closed down to make a Hollywood film this week. The Broadway Bridge and its west side ramps will be closed to vehicles for 3 nights, beginning tonight, to allow preparations for filming a scene for the movie Untraceable. Therefore, the bridge will be closed at 9 a.m. tonight and won't reopen until 5 a.m. tomorrow, then the next day at 11 p.m., then Wednesday at 8 p.m. And nobody's going to remember any of this.
No.
So the thing is, they're going to close down the Broadway Bridge to make another movie that centers on Portland. The bridge will be made, it'll be open to bicyclists and pedestrians, as always.
Movie that no one will see. Movie that no one will see, that will be released, that will fail and sink and vanish without fanfare. So, and you're right, we will make this announcement. Everybody will forget about this. Just like I'm always forgetting about the Burnside thing. I've lived here for a decade, and longer than that, really, on and off. But I've lived here solidly for a decade now. Every single time I'm headed downtown on Burnside, I forget that, like, once you get on the Burnside, that it's just that Bataan death march. Well, you can't turn. There's no turning, there's no deviating, there's no going back. And you have no choice but to drive all the way up into the West Hills and then hang a U-turn at some point.
All right, here's Tim Riley. Meanwhile, former President Bush, the old one, is being released from a California hospital after becoming dizzy and collapsing on a Palm Springs golf course yesterday afternoon. It's up there for an old man. Officials at the Rancho Mirage Medical Center say he was overweight and dehydrated, released this morning. He was playing golf with friends in 94-degree heat, and he fainted. A spokeswoman for Bush said he's doing fine and will go ahead with a scheduled appearance in L.A. before flying back to Houston tonight. The White House says the current President Bush was notified of his father's condition before traveling to Guatemala City.
I have no sympathy for anybody who is stricken while golfing. Really, if that's, if you have enough time that you could be, if you have so much money and so much free time that you can actually golf to the extent that it overexerts you and you pass out, I have no sympathy for you at all.
I mean, you're collapsing Palm Springs just walking down the street after 5 minutes.
Yeah, seriously. It's like, it really is like trying to feel sympathy for somebody who collapses while playing polo. I just can't summon it up.
All right. Meanwhile, as Congress prepares to debate the future of the course of the Iraq War, they already know what it is, but nobody will cooperate. Vice President Dick Cheney accuses the war critics of undermining U.S. troops.
Members of Congress pursue an anti-war strategy that's been called slow bleed. They're not supporting the troops.
No one's calling it
that. They're undermining them.
No one's saying that.
They're against war.
Why do you hate America?
Meanwhile, Vice President Cheney responds to critics on the ongoing war effort.
Commentators enjoy pointing out mistakes through the perceptive power of hindsight. But the biggest mistake of all can be seen in advance. A sudden withdrawal of our coalition would dissipate much of the effort that's gone into fighting the global war on terror and result in chaos and mounting danger.
Yes, like that's not going to happen. Yes, it would stop the smooth sailing that's happening over there right now. It would stop the smooth, calm, orderly progression towards democracy that's taking place right now, this very instant.
Meanwhile, who is next on the hit list? Why, it's Albert Gonzalez, who's he? He's the one that took over for, well, what's his name, the Attorney General. All Democrats want the Attorney General to resign. The call to replace Alberto Gonzalez also follows a report that the FBI improperly gathered private information and was conducting investigations. Democratic Senator Charles Schumer of New York tells CBS's Face the Nation that Gonzalez should quit, quote, for the sake of the nation.
He either doesn't accept or doesn't understand that he is no longer just the president's lawyer, but has a higher obligation to the rule of law and the Constitution, even when the president should not want it to be so.
Does it make me a bad America that I don't care about any of this?
No.
I really don't. I know that I should. I know that I'm supposed to care.
We're waiting for the next celebrity death.
That's it.
We're padding for time here.
This is really, you know, all these segments where we're talking about the Attorney General and these, you know, whatever Dick Cheney's talking about today, all of that is like the brown stuff in between the marshmallows in Lucky Charms. That really all is. And Anna Nicole and James Brown and Britney Spears and the guy from Boston, those are all the marshmallows. This is just all the dreck.
Yes. Yeah. Meanwhile, Senator Joe Biden says Gonzalez is not doing his job properly.
I think it's an abuse of power, and I think he's lost the confidence of the American people. I think he's lost the confidence of many in the United States Congress, and obviously it's the president's judgment to say whether he should not stay or not.
And one more. Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania says Congress should know more about what's happening first.
That's a question for the president and the attorney general, but I do think there have been lots of problems. But before we come to conclusions, I think we need to know more facts.
I don't even know who that was.
Arlen Specter.
All right. Well, there you go.
Specter.
Scotty is typing on the screen that golfing, that's a lie. The golfing required more exercise than bicycling. That's a low.
It would be in Palm Springs, I would imagine.
Well, I mean,
just a walk, just to keep one leg in front of the other in 94 degree heat.
I mean,
this is like what, 18 holes?
I suppose if you're laden down, but that's not even. I mean, I guess if you want to talk about how much you're going to sweat out, then as George Carlin once said, hitting a ball with a crooked stick and walking after it is not exercise. I mean, I said, but how far do you walk?
Like a loss.
On an 18-hole golf course.
A loss. You could build an entire subdivision of 500 homes there.
Really? I sort of thought it was,
Oh, you think of miniature golf. This is big golf.
Thank you for not calling it putt-putt golf, by the way. God, I hate that phrase. I hate it when people say that.
We're talking about the gentry here.
So how far, if you start out, now, can I just say this? I haven't gone golfing since I was a kid. Mm. My dad would golf because my dad had all of this class envy, and my dad thought that somehow, like my dad simultaneously hated yet wanted to be rich. He hated rich people, but was envious of them at the same time. And so my dad would do all these things And because he's dumb, he would do them all in a really retarded, he would screw them up constantly. And he would do them all in like a really incorrect and ridiculous fashion. Like going to Sizzler and sitting there and swirling the wine around in the glass, and like smelling the cork on the Sizzler wine. And then saying, this wine has a great nose, he would say, like to this bottle of $2 wine at the Steak Hut. Anyway. But he would drag me golfing as well, and like these hideous Kennewick golf. Imagine golfing in Kennewick, where it's like 180 degrees. Imagine me golfing in Kennewick. So if you start on hole number one, and then you go all the way to hole 18, how far is that distance wise? How many are you walking? What is it? Is it multiple miles?
I would say so. Yes.
You think really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Scotty is noting to no one's surprise that he is a huge golfer. All right. Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about it later.
Now your operator.
All right, that's fantastic. Jack, you're on the Rick. Well, you know what? At least the phone's actually working today, and I don't sound like I'm talking inside a paper tube. It'll take small advances. Jack, hello, sir.
Hey, I caddied for a friend of mine back in college. I was going to Phoenix, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
He was a big golfer, and he's trying to get me into it. And he goes, dude, look, why don't you be my caddy, and I'll show you what a great game it can be. Son of a gun, carrying that enormous golf bag around. Oh, I'm not only going to get sunburned, but I said never again.
Well, so
it was just too much.
So it's not golfing as such. It's that you're walking 8 miles laden down with like a 100-pound sack on you.
Yeah, I mean, any more than that, you might as well be a Marine out in Iraq.
I just don't.
Dear Lord.
I mean,
you sound
traumatized.
You look on TV and everyone's got these little golf carts.
Yeah.
You know, but you forget that, yeah, they got golf carts and caddies, but most of the time you carry your own equipment. Your own equipment, damn it.
Now, is it. You sound angry about it.
I'm sunburned. And I'm so hacked off about it.
Yes, I'm picking up on that. So here's something I don't know. Now, when you just go to golf, you're just some average guy, just some schnook like me, just some guy off the streets, and you go to golf somewhere. Now, are you carrying all your own stuff and like dragging along all your own crap in the sun?
Damn straight.
So you have to pay extra to have a golf cart.
Well, they also got quite a few kids that if you want. Pay him to carry your equipment around. You can do that,
right?
But for the most part, you know, people can just barely afford to get in, and so yeah, everybody carries their own equipment for the most part.
All right, so that's where the exercise. So if you're walking, like, so how much does a golf bag weigh?
I don't know, but okay. it was enough for that.
Let's take forever to think about it.
Yeah.
All right.
It was too much.
All right. Jack, thank you, sir.
Yeah, all right.
All right, there you go. I am Jack's silent rumination. It's 503-733-2970. You know, on the radio, just like a second and a half just seems like an hour sometimes. Let's do one. I swear to God, I didn't know we were going to talk about golf. Let's do one more here, and then we'll do more news. Jim, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
How you doing, Rick?
I'm fantastic because the phone sounds normal today.
Best show ever. Yes, and the phone does sound good.
Thank you.
But I grew up as one of those little kids at a golf course that got paid to haul those bags around.
Right.
And especially when the guys filled them up with beer, those things could weigh 40, 50 pounds.
Of course. That's where the exercise part comes in. It's the relentless lifting of beers to your mouth.
So there's a couple kinds of golf. There's the kind where you carry your own gear and you walk 4 to 5 miles and you're walking uphill, downhill and all that, having a good time. And then there's the kind when you have your golf cart with a case of beer in the cooler and you drive around, smoke cigars.
Really? I can't imagine, if you were going to golf, if you're going to spend the money to go golf, why you wouldn't just spend the money to get a golf cart as well?
Yeah, you know, you each guy pitches in another $10 and then you ride around.
Yeah, paying to carry an 80-pound bag in the sun, it's like paying a guy to kick me in the nuts over and over again. Why would I do that?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
You're
right. All right, that's Jim. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Scotty says he usually gets a golf cart, and I'm quoting now, so I can drink. I'm sure the other golfers appreciate that. Wheeling around drunkenly behind the controls of
a golf cart. So I can drink?
That's exactly what he typed on the screen. Oh, now he's removed it, but it was there. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
So while the old President Bush was fainting playing golf, his younger son was in Guatemala praising free trade. In a photo op, the president lifted up cartons of lettuce and put them on a loading dock. He said it creates jobs here and jobs in America.
Lifting up lettuce?
Lifting up lettuce.
All right.
Normally, Guatemala is a banana republic that slaughters anyone who speaks up against
it. Now it's a lettuce republic.
It is. Let's do the snuff watch.
Here's your double snuff watch from Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program. Let us now count the ways that Guatemala is a friend of the United States.
This is where most of our bananas come from.
Lettuce. Never mind. Here's Tim Riley with your double snuff watch.
Brad Delp, the lead singer of the 1970s band Boston, has died at his home in Atkinson, New Hampshire. Police are calling his death untimely. They said there's no indication of foul play or involvement with drugs or alcohol. Investigators say he was apparently alone at the time. Everything seemed to be normal, said Atkinson Police Chief Philip Constanzo. There's nothing disruptive in the house. He is a fairly healthy person from what we're able to ascertain. His fiancée arrived at the home at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, immediately calling for help when she found his body. He sang vocals in the 1976 Boston hits More Than a Feeling and Long Time. He also sang on Boston's most recent album, Corporate American, released in 2002. He was 55 years old and lived in New Hampshire for decades.
See, the weird thing about that story is how they say there's no foul play, no drugs or alcohol.
Tell a small town with one cop.
Lou, do you want to get the wagon in here? But then they call his death untimely. So that sounds like when they call the death untimely, that sounds like there's something suspicious there, but they don't want to reveal what it is quite yet. I don't know. I wrote a little blog entry about this. And I'm not like the world's biggest Boston fan. I mean, I'm like everybody else. I kind of got, you know, I sort of listened. I listened to that first Boston album a lot when I was like 15. But then, it just gets so overplayed. It's like, how can you really? It's one of those things that you know intellectually is a really, really strong rock album. In fact, I believe it is still actually the largest selling debut by a rock band in American history. I think even more so than Appetite for Destruction. But you know sort of intellectually that first Boston album is great, but you just can't tell anymore. That first Boston album and knowing those songs, and you think about one record that has so many hit songs on it. I mean, it has More Than a Feeling, Long Time, Peace of Mind, Smokin', Rock and Roll Band, Let Me Take You Home Tonight. I mean, all of those are huge hits, especially in classic rock radio. But it's like, it's sort of like having no sense of smell, and you just have to sort of rely on people around you to tell you what something smells like. I just have to sort of trust that the Boston album is good because I can't tell anymore. I mean, I was going to do this whole thing that I brought some Boston songs in with me. I was going to play one of them into the break. And I was listening to, I tried to put on More Than a Feeling in my office this morning. And I was trying to, like, view it with, like, new eyes and just sort of listen to it objectively. And it's not that it's a bad song. It's just that I can't hear it objectively. I hear More Than a Feeling and it's like the entire song is over before it's even begun. Like, I hear that first note and the entire song has instantly played in my head and I'm done. I just can't hear it objectively anymore. That notwithstanding, that Boston record sold 17 million copies. And as much as people tried to tag Boston as being corporate rock or being some sort of mainstream contrived rock put out by a record label, that entire thing was recorded in a guy's basement. I mean, it is an indie rock album. People don't really realize that. It is the very definition of an indie rock act. Tom Scholz wrote and recorded the entire thing in his basement on his own dime, took it to the record company, who then put it out almost unchanged. And then all of their other stuff sucked after that, of course. But, I mean, you know, you can't. I mean, that guy's going to be dead for 200 years, and people will still be playing More Than a Feeling, which is a great song. I can't really listen to it anymore, but it's a great song. So you can't take anything away from that. But a beautiful voice, too. And a guy who will probably never get the respect that he deserves. But, you know, you can't ask for more than, you know, there's probably 50 million people that have had great life-changing moments while Boston played somewhere in the background. So that's pretty much all you can ask for. So Brad Delp, he's dead.
Then we have a second one here. It's Canadian Jenny. Oh, Comedian Jenny, I'm sorry. He's died of a parent's suicide. Richard Jenny.
See, I don't even know who this is.
I don't either.
I have never heard of this
guy. I don't either.
And you can tell that he's not. They were trying to position him this morning on the news.
As like, he loved. It's like, I'm sure somebody does.
By his mother.
But I had never heard of this guy.
They were this morning. Cut down in his prime. A comedian, a funny man, leaves the stage too soon. You can tell he's not that famous, and here's how you can tell.
They have him standing next to Chris Rock, which helps a little bit.
There you go. That's exactly how I could tell that he wasn't really famous. Because
you put him next to somebody.
To prove that we were supposed to care about him. That's like when I die, they'll put a picture of me next to Don Rickles. That'll be it. It'll be a picture of me posing with Henry Rollins or something. There you go, Rick Emerson, who was beloved by his mother. I'm sorry. So go ahead.
So this fellow named Richard Jenny, I hope that's how you pronounce his name.
No one knows.
He's a stand-up comedian who played to sold-out crowds, allegedly. And was a regular on the Tonight Show, which may happen because nobody watches the Tonight Show, so nobody really knows anymore.
He apparently has
appeared in movies. But we do know for a fact that he died of a gunshot wound in an apparent suicide. He was a 45-year-old comedian. They found him alive but gravely injured in his West Hollywood home when they responded when his girlfriend called LAPD. The caller said, my boyfriend shot himself in the face.
Oh, good God. Way to be considerate, pal.
He died at a nearby hospital. Suicide has not yet been officially confirmed, and the investigation is continuing. Jenny, if that's how you pronounce his name.
It may have been pills.
Regularly toured the country with a stand-up act, and also appeared on several HBO comedy specials. Most recently, a big steaming pile of me.
To be fair, he is making us laugh now.
He is. He's dead. And he's a friend of Chris Rock, apparently.
What's his name? Richard?
Richard Jenny.
Richard Jenny. Jenny. How's it spelled?
J-E-N-I.
Sarah, anything?
I had a friend named Jenny who spelled it like that. I'd say Jenny.
No, but, I mean, have you ever heard of him?
Oh, no. I have no idea.
So it wouldn't be like a Jenny Lane.
Yeah,
he doesn't even look like it. You know, he looks kind of like a Jackie Martling type. One of those guys who might have been able to be a comedian like in the 60s, but who now you would never.
I don't know what his shtick would be or what his telltale joke would be.
what is Richard Jenny's catchphrase?
Dynamite?
No, they don't. And that's a bad way to go, by the way, shooting yourself.
Shooting yourself in the face. Shooting yourself in the face and not actually.
And then it doesn't even really work. It's all the, damn. All right, well, there you go. And just do it when your girlfriend's not home. Don't be a dick. If you really have to shoot yourself in the face, go. That's what hotel rooms are for, friend. It should drop a note to the police department and go find a hotel room.
Okay, I recognized him from something I knew. He was in The Mask with Jim Carrey. He played his best friend in that. Do you remember that movie?
So he was in a movie 15 years ago with Cameron Diaz and Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Well.
Apparently he'll be missed by somebody or other. All right. Well, as Drew Curtis would say, good night, funny man. All right. There you go. There's your double. Thank you. Ryan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
As far as golf goes, you know, it can be exerting when you're walking around with your bag and everything, but it only costs like $10 to get a cart. And if you really don't want to drive, you can get a cart for your bag alone. But,
really?
The great thing is, you know, you go play 9 holes in 90-degree heat, which just makes you... really, really thirsty, so you're able to drink like a full case of that 3 hours out here on the course.
Fantastic.
If you happen to be driving, you know, a lot of hilarity can ensue from, driving drunk on green grass at full speed.
Is it illegal to operate a golf cart on a golf course while you're drunk, do you suppose?
No, because you can buy the beer at the golf course before you go out and play the course.
Is that true, really?
Yeah, a lot of golf courses, they have signs that say no outside alcohol allowed. So they want you to go buy the cans at the bar.
I'm surprised that there aren't accidents all the time on golf courses. Maybe there are, we just don't hear about it. So Scotty is now typing in the screen. I do it all the time. Legal drinking and driving.
Well,
fantastic.
I got to tell you, I know of a couple of accidents in my own circle of friends, but
they're not reported up in Yellow Point.
No, of course not. No, like, there's a code of silence.
When you roll a golf cart and you snap the top off and it lands on top of your friends and that kind of thing, you know, it's all fun.
Have you done this?
Yes.
You've rolled a golf cart.
I personally have rolled one, and my brother has rolled three to my knowledge.
This is fascinating. Oh, who knew that the world of golf was so topsy-turvy? So when you roll a golf cart, you have to pay for it? You have to pay to get it fixed?
If they know.
Really?
Yeah.
So
if
you,
they know about it.
But you have to rent a golf cart. Don't they say something when you return it and the top is missing?
Well, yeah.
So, I'm confused.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you flip the thing upside down. I'm saying it might land on its side, you know, or...
Okay, so have you damaged a golf cart, sir?
To my knowledge, yes, you're supposed to pay for it.
Okay, but have you paid for it?
No, the one time that I was with friends and we rolled a golf cart, we just told them that someone stole the golf cart from us and they gave us our money back.
That's genius. Excellent.
The groundskeeper came up and stole the keys and said, I think you're done with this. And when we came back, they go, yes, he took it when someone was driving through the bushes. And they go, yeah, we had to run up our bags off the back of the cart because I'm so sorry. Here's your money back.
Excellent. The Rick Emerson Show salutes you, sir, and your American ingenuity. God bless you.
All right. Oh, and by the way, Jenny is the way to say the guy's name.
Yeah.
And when you're thinking about it, I could picture his face then, not now.
Yeah, I was going to say, picturing it now is either harder or easier. There's probably less of it to picture now. All right. Thank you.
No problem.
All right, there you go.
And is that his fiance found him?
Fiance, girlfriend, whatever. The guy's an ass for doing that. So, you know what? I don't care if anybody cares. If you want to kill yourself, you know, that's your... I mean, I guess ultimately that's your decision and whatever. But, you know, don't do it if somebody's going to come home and find you or whatever. That's just being a dick. And, you know, you don't want to be remembered as a guy who's a dick. So, all right, let's see. Stu, come on, then we'll break here. KC, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Rick?
Hey, what's up?
Two things real quick. As far as the golf thing goes,
yeah,
you can find the hottest girls on the golf cart driving the little beer cart around.
Well, of course.
And they'll actually drive around the golf course with a cooler and charge you like $4 for a 12-ounce can of Bud.
Of course. Well, that's like if you're at, like if you go to like San Miguel de Allende, when you're going down those little rivers, there are actually like little boats that will come up next to you on the river and be like, how do you want a taco and a margarita? That'll be $19. You know, and then a guy like hands it from his boat to yours and then speeds off. Yeah.
The other thing, Richard Jenny was regularly a guest on Lycus.
People have actually said it. I got a few calls from him. I guess I've never heard him or he didn't stand out or whatever. I guess he had some special that was on Showtime. I don't have Showtime, so that might explain it. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now he's dead. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fantastic. All right. Not fantastic that he's dead, but what are you going to do? All right, 503-733-2970. Take a break here.
I don't even feel any sympathy for him.
No, it's because it's just...
That is a terrible thing to do. Blow your face off, and then your girlfriend, who not only you've proposed to...
Yeah, seriously.
...make her find your, like, smushed face.
Yeah, and that you're not even dead. And, yeah, it's just that's an a-hole way to go out. So, you know, that's what clips are for. Really? You gotta end it all? And you're in Los Angeles, right? I mean, there's all kinds of things you could throw yourself off of in Los Angeles. The Capitol Records building, for example. I'm just saying. It's 503-733-2970. Go find an industrial pulper of some kind. 503, you're not going to F that up. You take care of that first time. Don't go anywhere. It's Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Emerson Show, 503-733-2970. Rick, about Richard Jenny. He had that horrible show called Platypus Man, if that rings a bell. No, not at all. Platypus Man, really? Yeah, I think I speak for everybody when I say, he was also in The Mask. He was horrible. What's up with comedians and suicide? All right, I don't know the answer to that. All right, 503-733-2970 is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We return to Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth, here in just a moment. Later on, Darwin Watch. We'll also talk to Peter Carlin about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions, top five, and so forth. Jim, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, Jim.
Hi. How are you?
Yeah.
Hey, got one. We used to own a carpet cleaning business and got a panic call from somebody one night. They said, get out here. You got to clean this up. And we get there. A guy had tried to do himself with a 357.
Welcome to the lunch hour, everybody.
And apparently right at the moment he pulled the trigger, he must have jerked to one side, went out his cheek, took his ear off. Of course, the apartment manager's got, this is out in Gresham, mind you, the apartment manager's got to describe every little gnarly bit, and so we go in and we start working, moving some stuff around, and here's a chunk of the guy's ear stuck in the wall, you know, and it was perfect. And had another one time, the guy calls me up, you got to come out, you got to do this thing, get there. God, the place is a mess. A woman tried to psycho her husband while he was in the shower.
Right.
In shreds with a large French knife and chased him out onto the patio. It was everywhere.
Okay.
Including chunks of the individual. It was, hence the wonderful world of carpet cleaning.
Oh, we're done now. Thanks. Thanks so much. All right, God bless you. Thanks. Good God. Why would you feel, thanks for the call and all, but, I guess I am kind of flattered that they think of us when they, I was going to act all horrified, like, why would you possibly call us with that? But, of course, I know why they would call. Who else are you going to call with that? It's just us. It is sort of a, we are sort of a give us your tired, your huddled, your yearning masses who long to tell a story about some guy's ear they found in a wall. Hey, I found something over ear. Over ear.
We heard you.
Okay. Let's welcome down to the Rick Emerson Show from the Ground Zero Lounge and groundzeromedia.org, our good friend Clyde Lewis.
I like that.
There's another pun there, but I can't quite think of it.
You caught me off guard. You know, I was actually gonna do some Brad Delp songs today, but since I read your obit, I can't for the life of me do it anymore.
No, I mean, it's easy to make fun of Boston, and it's easy to make fun of all the songs because they're overplayed to death.
Right.
But I mean, you know what? That guy sold 17 million records, and I didn't. So, you know what? That guy's going to be around. That guy's voice is going to be playing long after you and
but
I.
Think of the possibilities for song parodies now.
I don't know, Clyde. What would those be?
On my back. Never mind. Anyway. So don't look back. It's on my back.
Oh, I see. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've lost my feeling.
No.
Close my eyes and I pass away.
Okay, that's
anyway.
Fine. All right, I'll give you that.
I figured, you know, something out there. There was something out there that needed to be touched, grabbed, or what have you. But Richard Jenny's a jerk.
I don't even know who it is.
You don't know who Richard Jenny is?
No, I've never heard of the guy.
No, he seemed like he was always uptight. He kind of looked like Casey Kasem a little bit.
Yeah, I was looking at this here. Apparently he was huge in Platypus Man.
That's a name that I'd like to have on my moniker is Platypus Man.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, did you hear about the big conspiracy right now is whether or not Dick Cheney is going to step down because of the fact that he was on a plane 21 hours and he got himself blood clots in his leg. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, well, I know that he had a clot and then there was...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, the fascinating thing is not that he was on a plane for 21 hours. The fascinating thing is that he has blood.
Yeah.
I think.
That he's not just filled with a thick, viscous goo.
Yeah, exactly.
Some sort of black slug.
That he has a heart that pumps that blood into his veins. That's the thing that's the thing that was fascinating.
It's not actually his own heart. It's a series of children's hearts that he has to rip out and then hold aloft, still beating.
It's his cold reptilian heart that's beating and beating the blue blood through his veins.
Yes.
Getting ready to have that thrombosis before he just dies on us all.
Yeah,
anyway.
He really is.
Did you hear that Hillary Clinton called herself the JFK of 2008?
Oh, we had that story coming up, actually.
Oh, my God.
That's a thing that every politician has to do at some point. Tim noted that there's always one. There's always one person who has to sort of align themselves with the candidate. It always happens.
That's up there with Britney Spears saying that she's the Antichrist. I think that fits. It's kind of... I think the world is going weird. It's going wacko. I mean, more wacko than I am. I think it's going just totally... Just, you know, here's an idea. We're actually living the X-Files. You hear about the honeybees?
No.
The honeybees are dying in record numbers. They don't know why. They're just dying. And Einstein said that if the honeybees die, we're not going to be around for 4 years. In 4 years, we won't be around.
Okay.
And so I'm kind of nervous about that because, you know, tonight we're showing An Inconvenient Truth at Dante's about 6 o'clock. I'll be there to show that. And we showed Jesus Camp last week. If you wanted to see a horror movie.
Jesus Camp is freaky.
Jesus Camp was scary. I was watching that. Just it made me nervous. I had to drink. I had to drink.
I had no choice.
I had no choice. I forced myself to drink a lot of rum that night. But, it was just, this week it's going to be An Inconvenient Truth. I'm going to talk a little bit about the honeybees, maybe. I mean, I know that sounds boring, but it's really, really fascinating to sit there and talk about just the X-Files connotation, the idea of the black oil or the black fungus killing all these bees, which is kind of a fascinating thing. But the big news, Rick, really, the big news, I don't know if you've seen it yet. I sent you an email. Maybe you didn't. The Day Called X is coming out. Did you see the preview?
Oh, this is the Ground Zero movie?
Yeah, it's the Ground Zero movie. You're in it. I don't know where, but you're in it.
See, you keep saying that, and I keep saying that I don't remember anybody filming. Is this like some sort of Bowfinger thing where a guy was just following me around and filming me from across the street and I don't remember?
I don't know. I mean, anytime, you know,
like
I'm around.
In a hotel somewhere or something?
Well, I mean, anytime I'm around, you're there, or anytime you're around, I'm around somewhere. And so I guess you basically wind up in the camera, and I'll bet you said some really, really weird things about me. I bet he put a camera in front of you and said, tell us about, you know, Clyde Lewis is on all, you know, playing with a full deck of cards. And I think maybe
who said some things. Who put a camera to him? Who made this film?
His name is Curtis Lee Fulton. He now lives in Bend, Oregon. But I think he was a Los Angeles filmmaker who came to Portland because he heard about Klingon karaoke. And he came out to Bodacious Classics and started filming there. And he's got, like, I bet the film is mostly Betsy, though, because I noticed in the teaser, it shows Betsy, like, dancing with me. She's doing this Trinity thing, and I'm Agent Smith, and she's kicking me, and I'm throwing her around like a rag. And then you see her putting her leg behind her head, and then you see me basically on the air just being a real dork.
It's an art film.
Yeah, it's kind of like what you'd see in an art house film, but it's funny because it just, I mean, at the end, you see the Klingon smoking. He's standing outside smoking a cigarette. And it's like just some bizarre world that, you know, was around back in 2003 that only a few people knew about. And you're a part of it. And I don't know who else was in there, but I'm sure there are a number of people. I think Dina DeCastro was in it. I think that a number of people. I mean, this was back in 2003 when, you know, I was just first. Actually, it was right after the national show went kaput, and I was basically doing all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, in the underground here in Portland. And it's really funny because I was watching it, and I was laughing through the whole thing because I thought, you know, I can imagine this film is just going to be just, you know, completely bizarre.
So,
people are not going to know what to believe about
so
it.
So you're showing Inconvenient Truth tonight, and then when is The Day Called X showing?
The Day Called X is going to be showing at the Laurelhurst Theater on March 31st at 8:30 p.m. And I'm sure that I've been noticing people have been marking it on their calendar because they say it looks pretty interesting. I have not seen it yet, so I don't know how it's going to depict me. It may depict me looking like a total fool, which is, you know, par. Uh-huh. But it could also, you know, make it, you know, they can make a really good film out of it. I think that when we were involved with that kind of stuff, it was a lot of fun. I think people will, you know, wonder why they never did get involved if they never did, and those that went will remember it fondly, and you know, and how they went to that bar and I was in the basement and it was dark and it was full of Klingons and stormtroopers and plushies and all kinds of weird people crawling out of the woodwork.
A Day Called X, March 31st at the Laurelhurst Theater, 8
yeah.
p.m. and tonight, An Inconvenient Truth
at
Dante's.
And then I'll be speaking at 8 o'clock and it's going to be an interesting show. Last week we had a really good show. A lot of people showed up. And we like to fill up Dante's because the whole Ground Zero thing, if you think it's just me just spouting off conspiracy theories, it's kind of like a stand-up routine for conspiracy theorists, so it's kind of fun.
You should end by shooting yourself in the face.
I think...
That's apparently
that's
the hot news.
But I can only do that act once, right?
Bam, and he's out. Clyde Lewis tonight at Dante's. The
right.
Website is groundzeromedia.org. Thank you, my friend. There you go. The genius. Well, see a little alley-oop there. Clyde Lewis, ladies and gentlemen. All right. That's the hot new shtick among the comedians. All right, here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And our other top story, 8 endangered pygmy rabbits from the Oregon Zoo will be released into the wild of central Washington tomorrow. These pygmy rabbits are equipped with radio collars, will be set free with 12 other normal rabbits that are being bred at Washington State University in their native sagebrush habitat near Euphrata, Washington. They prepared 40 artificial burrows to protect these rabbits from predators such as coyotes and hawks.
They hope the rabbits will then dig their own burrows before breeding season begins in just a couple of weeks. This is part of the Columbia Basin Pygmy Rabbit Foundation.
Well, okay. Rick, let's see. There are companies that specialize in crime scene cleanups. Yeah, it's like that movie Curdled with, I don't know the actress's name, but she's in Pulp Fiction. She plays Maria Villalobos, the cab driver who takes Bruce Willis on the lam after he kills that guy in the ring. She starred in a Tarantino film, a film he produced called Curdled, where she played, like, it was a hot woman who cleaned up a crime scene. So there's like a whole industry. Rick, several years ago at McKay Golf Course, some guys decided to play bumper cars with their golf carts and go off-road through the woods and do some cross-country golfing. Needless to say, when they returned to the clubhouse, they were greeted by some of Beaverton's finest and escorted away in the back seat wearing bracelets to discuss restitution with a judge. Later, they found out that the bill for wrecked golf carts came out at over $20,000. They were all severely impaired by adult liquid beverages and served time in the Crowbar Hotel. In Canada, golf carts are licensed just like your car, and you can be convicted of drunk driving if you are caught operating them under the... It seems impossible that you could be drunk and driving a golf course, driving a golf cart on the golf course, and for it not to be illegal. I mean, you can't...
Yeah, because if you ride your bike or a horse or anything, you can get arrested.
Yeah, I mean, you can't... you can't drive a car drunk in a parking lot just because it's private property. Driving, I mean, Scotty, I'm not trying to get you into trouble or anything, but it does seem if you're liquored up, you're still not legally allowed to drive a golf cart. That would just be, not that I really care, I'm just be my speculation. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, Kha'zix are rushing over Sacha Baron's Barrett. It has been released on DVD from Amazon.co.uk. Barrett topped the order list from consumers in the former Soviet Republic, according to the head of media, Reki Pekluva. With the controversy the film has caused around the world, it seems the residents of Kazakhstan are now desperate to see what all the fuss is about. So they're willing to pay 505 Kazaki tenge, which is $4, to have the DVD delivered from the UK to their tiny hamlets.
What could they possibly play the DVD on?
I don't know.
They all have, it's like one DVD player that the entire country shares.
The most popular album being shipped to Kazakhstan at the moment is The Very Best of Sting and The Police.
Really?
I don't know why.
Fantastic. There you go. Well, Kazakhstan, they do set the they do set the course. They set the standard for the rest of the world. All right.
Elsewhere in international news, a 57-year-old Swiss man has pled guilty in court in Thailand to charges of insulting the king of Thailand. Oliver Juper was arrested last December after drunkenly spray-painting several portraits of the monarch, and now he faces 75 years in jail.
Did you see... okay, we had on Friday this insane story about Anna Nicole Smith. About Anna Nicole Smith and this, whether or not she has... whether or not she has this half-brother, and Tim
I
read...
Is that a true story?
Well,
not that it matters.
I don't really care.
That's true.
I mean, that isn't it right, donkey story turned out to be fake, but I don't care. We treat all... The thing is, we are equal opportunity newscasters here. We treat all stories as though they're real. We don't bother...
And we operate like any traditional news source. We don't check our sources ever.
No.
We just read what's put in front of us. We report, you decide.
Yeah, I mean, you know, screw this business of needing two sources or something for a story. I mean, it comes off the net. It comes from TMZ. It's gold. It doesn't matter.
It's not like we're sending people out to investigate.
Seriously, who would we possibly send? I mean, there'd be nothing to do. Send Tinker out there to cover. There's nothing. So we had this insane story on Friday about Anna Nicole Smith getting it on with some Indian guy, and that is, as Adam Carolla would say, that is a feather Indian, not a dot Indian. Some guy on some reservation somewhere. I'm not gonna reread the entire story because this fat boy said this would be like covering Stairway to Heaven. There's just no point. But I do believe that there's some facts that we did that were not in the version we had Friday. Says just when you thought you heard everything, the Anna Nicole Smith saga simply could not get any more bizarre. A Phoenix newspaper, this is the story that Tim read on Friday, has printed a story that another child may be linked to the deceased Playboy playmate and reality TV star. Anna Nicole Smith had a torrid affair with an Indian man named Johnny Soto during a stay at the Sanctuary Resort and Spa. The tryst produced a son, the now 5-year-old Marshall Soto, named after her deceased husband, J. Howard Marshall, according to the Phoenix New Times. Again, this is what Tim had read on Friday. And then it reprints sections of this, although there's a few parts of this that I don't remember reading on Friday. And I'm unclear about whether I should read this or whether I should have Tim read this as a follow-up.
I think you should read it.
I honestly don't think there's any topping Friday.
It's just a few sentences that I don't remember Tim reading, because these were not reported, I think, in
right,
Friday's
story. In all fairness, because we had guests in here, I abbreviated my reporting.
So you did not read the part?
No, I did not report everything that I had in front of me.
You did not read this section?
And I was trying to make a very good impression on our CNN friend.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah, I'm sure that happened.
I mean,
the applications in the mail, I should be receiving it any day now.
Well, I wonder why. I mean, Tyler Moody, who is one of the bosses at CNN, was here on Friday. He is Jim Roop's boss, Lisa Goddard's boss, etc. And he's only like 20, but I mean, it's just insane. He's a poobah, as they used to say when I was growing up there. He's a bigwig, a fat cat, one might say. I'm unclear about why he was here on Friday. I'm not saying that he was lying about it. Maybe he was just passing through Portland. It does seem a little strange. I do wonder in the back of my head, not to self-aggrandize our importance in this whole thing, but I do wonder if maybe he's had questions or comments or complaints about that station in Portland and the way they do things.
It was a little strange because he didn't really have any reason to be in Portland, right?
No, there really was no reason. He was in Los Angeles, and then he was heading back to Atlanta. And Portland is not really, between L.A. and Atlanta, like in terms of the...
we do have some celebrities who live
air traffic, I suppose.
Two or three.
So it's
Gus Van Zandt and that other fellow with the blonde hair.
So it's kind of strange to be here. I do wonder whether somebody sort of has been asking him about that show in Portland and what's their deal anyway. Because he was here for no readily apparent reason. Anyway, so he was here just in time for Tim to read this. Do we have some appropriate music for this Anna Nicole Smith story?
What would you deem appropriate?
I don't know. Something that sounds like it's... Do we have the porn music?
Sure.
All right. I'm just going to read. Now, some of this you have already heard. They rarely left the townhouse-style dwelling, having room service bring them champagne, oysters, anything they wanted. At one point, Anna Nicole Smith had a yen for fried chicken. So she sent her... This, she's all class. So she sent her limo driver in search of a KFC. He returned with... How many buckets would you think Anna Nicole Smith would order for dinner?
10.
Five? Yeah. With five buckets... 10. Five buckets of extra crispy and container after container of mashed potatoes with gravy. At one point, she smeared potatoes and gravy all over Soto's private area.
Headdress.
Over his headdress. And then licked his headdress clean. And then there's the business of... He said... Sometimes I felt like I was being used, and it left a bad taste in my mouth, but I was just as guilty as she was, says this Indian guy who was stripping Anna Nicole Smith. The only whites I'd ever had sex with were prostitutes, and I couldn't get enough of Anna Nicole. I fell under her spell. I did whatever she asked. That meant enduring Anna Nicole singing the Disney song, What Made the Red Man Red, from Peter Pan, at the top of her lungs as they took a bubble bath together. I don't remember that song. Does anybody remember?
I've never heard of that song.
Does anybody remember?
The only thing I remember is Small World, which plays in this continuous 10-second loop when you're going in the boat through the Small World exhibit.
Well, this is from Peter Pan, presumably the animated Peter Pan. What Made the Red Man Red? Apparently she would sing it as they were bubble bathing together, or, how do I put this? Or complying with her insistence that he, quote, I'm quoting now, this is a quote from a news story from the postchronicle.com. He says that meant enduring Anna Nicole singing the Disney song What Made the Red Man Red from Peter Pan as they took a bubble bath together, or complying with her insistence that he perform, quote, an engine yell, end quote, at the conclusion of his sexual performance.
She's a real charmer.
How do you suppose she requested that? An engine yell. I don't even know what an engine yell sounds like. Engine. I-N-J-U-N. What do you suppose an engine yell is, Sarah?
You know what?
I don't. This is... Are you yawning?
Yes.
All right. Sarah's waving her hand, touching her hand to her lips repeatedly as though she's fatigued.
I found the lyrics to What Made the Red Man Red.
Really?
I printed them out for Tim.
All right. Well, we'll have those.
Thank you.
We'll have those when we get back later on. The top five, Peter Carlin, and so forth. More from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth around the corner. You say there's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.